reasonably black and white as they were. So 1 Timothy 6:6, looking at this theme of contentment across Scripture, it's one that's fairly broad, both Old and New Testament. So 1 Timothy 6:6, godliness with contentment is great gain. And of course, a classic one that we would have learnt maybe many years ago, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Psalm 23, verse 1. Hebrews 13, 5, keep your life free from the love of money and be content with what you have. For he has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. And the last one, take delight in the Lord and he will give you the desires of your heart. So this morning what I want to speak about is a couple of points regarding contentment. And firstly, the state in verse 11. If we could bring up verse 11 of Philippians 4. And look at this difference here between want and contentment. And it seems to be there's a couple of options here that we can consider. And I'd like to read you a little story about contentment that you may have heard before. And it's a classic one about the Mexican fisherman. Now, some of you may remember this from the very first time I ever spoke about this, which was well before I came here as pastor. I spoke one summer, it would have been about, I think, 1996, a long time ago. And I came to speak here, and at the time I was aware of the Stark brothers, and I was aware of the fishing industry that they were involved with and the boat building concern they had. But felt to bring this story, which is a very well-known one regarding contentment. And it's called the Mexican fisherman and the investment banker. So an American investment banker was taking a much-needed vacation in a small coastal Mexican village. There was going to be some nice pictures up here of Mexican fishing boats. But if you can imagine it, the typical Mexican fishing boat is a small boat. It has one outboard and one box for fish. So this was the context with which the investment banker was speaking to the fisherman. He saw a small boat with one fisherman just docked. The boat had several large, fresh fish in it. The investment banker was impressed by the quality of the fish and asked the Mexican how long it took to catch him. The Mexican replied, only a little while. Then the banker asked him, why don't you stay out longer and catch more fish? The Mexican replied he had enough to support his family's immediate needs. Then he said, the banker to the fisherman, well, what do you do with the rest of your time? And he said, I sleep late, I fish a little, play with my children, take a siesta with my wife, stroll into the village. Each evening where I sip wine and play guitar with my amigos. I have a full and busy life, senor. The investment banker scoffed and said, I'm an Ivy League MBA and I could help you. You could spend more time fishing and with the proceeds buy a bigger boat. And with the proceeds from the bigger boat, you could buy several boats until eventually you'd have a whole fleet of fishing boats. Instead of selling your catch to the middleman, eventually you could sell directly to the processor, eventually opening your own cannery. You could just control the product, processing, and distribution, the whole supply chain. Then he added, of course, you would need to leave this small coastal fishing village and move to Mexico City where you could run your growing enterprise. The Mexican fisherman asked, but senor, how long would all this take? To which the American replied, well, 15 to 20 years on average. But what then? Asked the Mexican. The American laughed and said, that's the best part. When the time is right, you announce an IPO and sell your company's stock to the public and become very rich. You could make millions. Millions, senor. Then what? To which the investment banker replied, then you would retire. You could move to a small coastal fishing village where you could sleep late, fish a little, play with your kids, take a siesta with your wife, stroll to the village in the evenings where you could sip wine and play guitar with your amigos. A lot of the conversations I had last week with people were those who desired to, if you like, sip wine or some Baptist equivalent and play the guitar in the word of the bodega, I guess, with their amigos. And I wonder for many of us if we've forgotten what it is in the situation between want and contentment that Paul talks about. Because in verse 11, if we could bring that up, thanks, Andy, there's a difference between those two states, between want and contentment. And he says, and not that I speak in regard to need, because I have learned whatever state I am in to be content. Now, there seems to be something in the learning of this. I'd like to consider that the learning of something is something that it takes a little bit of time to go into. We might say that we're in a state of either being in contentment or getting towards that. Last night I watched a movie called Layer Cake, which is a bit of a gritty movie about a drug deal gone terribly wrong, and it's double cross after double cross after double cross. Wouldn't necessarily recommend the movie. It was quite interesting. But what happens as you go through the movie, it starts off, it says, at the bottom of the layer, you take rubbish from everyone. You have to be the go-getter. As you move up further, you have those who you can pass down, and then those who you're reporting to. As you go further and further up the layer cake, you eventually get to the top, you've forgotten what it's all about. But eventually someone from the bottom will rise up to the top, and those at the top in the drug scene particularly are bumped off from those who desire to get up there. And it seemed to be that in the process of what we often go through, even this was a graphic representation of it, is a striving situation many of us go through. Starting off saying, I'm starting at the bottom and I have to start off and earn my way in the world and work my way to the point where others are serving me. But often that happens much too late in life and at considerable cost. I think it was M. Scott Fitzgerald made a comment and he said, the very rich are different from you and I, to which I'd say they sure am. I've had the privilege of meeting some very rich people who live here in Christchurch. I'm talking multi-millionaires, and they sort of work at a different level. But one of the phrases I found is particularly applicable to them is that some people are so poor, all they have is money. Now, please don't hear me. This doesn't characterize all of the very rich, but there seems to be a number of sacrifices that have had to be paid along that way. Some years ago, I was working in mental health, and the interesting thing I found in mental health as the accountant was looking over the accounts of those who had been admitted into care, at least for a period of time. The sobering thing for me is many of the names that I read were the children and grandchildren of founding fathers of business here in the city. I won't mention any names, but if you can imagine some prominent second or third generation business names, these were represented in those who were in care because for whatever reason, even with all of the money and the wealth, there had been breakdown in family, there had been very much exhibited a lack of content. So, how do we get this content that Paul says? We see here in verse 11, he said, I don't speak in regard to any, I have learned whatever state I'm in to be content. And it seems to be that's a learned behavior. It's not something that just happens. We don't wake up one day and become content. Many of us are learning what it is to be proficient, to be capable, to be good at something. We're either studying for that or in our jobs or in our ministries. We find after a while, we would actually say we've reached a point of proficiency where we can actually do something fairly well. But as we saw in the story of the banker, it takes 15 or 20 years to go down that route to end up almost back where you started from. But it takes a long period of time. However, if that is what you are doing, it is a learned behavior. So learning to be content seems to be something that many of us never quite grasp, even with a lifetime of learning, because it's not something we've necessarily applied ourselves to. Now, you're probably a little bit sick of hearing me test drive my sermons in the week before, but it was an interesting week learning to be content. I mentioned a few weeks ago my experiences with what I was speaking on at the time. And we have been in the process for some time and shopping for some new chairs to have when we have tea together, when we have people up for a meal, because they're a little bit embarrassing. They've sat outside, they're looking a little bit the worse for wear. And when you're shopping for furniture, it's something that is, I think, geared towards making you feel a lack of content with anything other than the very best. So if you go around the various shops that are there, if you've ever been to Mackenzie and Willis, I don't know if you've been there, it's amazing what you can spend on a chair. I didn't know you could actually spend that much. And actually, it's come to our very own patch. There's some, I think it's Tillman's Fine Furniture, just along Summerfield. I would recommend that if you want your eyes popped as to how much you can spend on a chair or a lounge suite. However, I fully understand that if money is no object, then or little object, then it's possible to spend and enjoy that on furniture. In fact, it's become quite common where we live in our place when a house is getting painted that everything goes. Don't know if you've ever seen a skip with five-year-old furniture, TV, stereos, everything. But that is what happens in some of the houses when they're being done around our place. Now, I didn't quite believe it, but actually everything goes because it's much cleaner and fresher to start again. So this is a different level of, it's not really related initially to contentment, but the point for us is that we thought we wanted sort of a mid-level chair. We'd gone cheap before, that hadn't worked for us, etc. We spent some time, we actually took a day travelling around, and we thought at the end of the day, this is a confession I have to make before you, none of these are as comfortable as the church chairs. Would the church notice if we flogged four chairs and took them home? The justification being that often some of the meals we have are with folk from church anyway, but we thought we felt a bit guilty about that, or at least we did at the start of the day, and we drove around checking out various chairs. The first place we went to was Briscoe's, where we sat on these chairs, which were quite nice when we sat on the first one, but then the second one felt better. And the third one, we weren't too sure. So we're a little bit confused by the time we left Briscoe's. We then went to Big Save. The same event occurred, onto the warehouse, and then finally to Target, which is where we ended our look. The reason I mention this is there was a considerable outlay to get the chairs that we actually want. But in the end, the chair we most liked was the manager's chair. You ever notice this in various stores where you look at all the chairs they have for sale, then you sit on the chair that the person who's selling it to you sits on all day. Or someone's selling your car, you look at the car that they're driving. Or someone's who's selling your house, you look at their house. That's the one that's often not for sale, but the one who's an expert in chairs sits on. So we sat on this chair, and it was amazing. It hugged our backs, our legs, it was comfortable, the colour was nice, it had a good heft to it, a good weight, etc. And we had sort of set ourselves a budget of, and you know, it might sound a bit cheap here, around 110 a chair. And we thought we'd seen this because she said, well, we don't actually have that for the sale at the moment. It's up for 123 bucks. And we thought we can probably fudge that a bit or they can knock a bit off, etc. And we were convincing ourselves that this was the Lord's chair for us. Ever done that? Prayed about something, spent some time looking, said, this must be the Lord. Because at the end of a long time, he who seeks will find. And we felt that we had found the most comfortable chair, and it was the Lord's provision unto us. But as we got the bad news from the manager who came back and looked, A, the chair wasn't actually for sale, but they could get it in, which our hearts lowered and rose again, we discovered the chair was $350 each. So we went from sort of thinking, well, $100, more. So at the end of the day, we realized there was going to be well over $1,000 for these four chairs. To which we made a rational decision at the start of the day, and I'm getting over that by confessing it to you. Maybe the church wouldn't notice four chairs taken away. We took them away last night, we sat down and had a family meal, and we decided that we were perfectly content with it. Now, the point to that big long story is there was a learning process involved. We thought we were after one particular thing, and we were learning during the day. But were we learning to be content? I actually think we're learning to be not content. And I actually think that's a big part of the learning process out there in the world system. I've often mentioned to us the upside down nature of the kingdom. It turns everything that we're being told and taught on its head. And if I could say anyone, particularly to those who are younger here today, if we can learn younger how to be content, what a difference it would be. What a huge difference. So Paul has said here, whatever situation I'm in, whether I'm in need or I'm not, I've learned how to be content. And that's the second part I want to lead us to here in verse 12. Thanks, Sam. It talks about two things here in verse 12. It talks about being abased and being abounding. Now, this seems to be a pretty key thing that we need to learn. If we to learn how to be content, it involves two different status, if you like, or positions that we happen to be in. And Paul has said, whether I am abased, which is actually a term meaning I have taken myself. I've not been abused, which is when someone else does it to me. Being abased is the difference is one letter, is when I take myself to a position of humility. I could say that I need and deserve this particular level, but I have chosen to abase myself in order to do something I wouldn't be able to do otherwise. For example, Many years ago, as an accountant, we talked often about social work. And we talked about social work in the church and outside of the church. And most social workers would earn below the average wage. And you might not fully appreciate the job that a social worker does until you see the effects of having no social work in a particular area. You could say it could be the same as the effects of having no gospel in a certain area. Please don't hear me equate the two. But there's a similar situation where people have had to chosen to take a lesser remuneration, or in the case of some missionaries, as you know, going no remuneration at all in order to do something that would not otherwise get done but is very important. Paul, the context of the story, has chosen to put himself down to a lower position in order to achieve something that would not otherwise be possible. In other words, if he didn't do it, no one else certainly was going to do it. But he also mentions the word abound. And abounding is where there is abundance. So he said, I know that whether I'm in a situation where I've put myself down or whether I'm being hosted, because he mentions a number of times being hosted by these equivalent to multimillionaires. The other day I went for a ride in a DB11. I don't know if you've heard of a DB11. There's only, I think, one of them in the city. I think there's about four or five in the country. One of my friends, a multimillionaire, has just bought a DB11. I think it's around $300,000. Now, we sat in the car, and I've got an old Jag, and I think my friend has a little bit of a thing against Jags, because the background is that the same designer that designed some Jaguars also designed some Aston Martins back in the day. Now, DB11, excuse the detail, is an Aston Martin that is the latest, or getting on the latest production version. As we sat in the car, which I enjoyed very much, he moaned about the Jaguar-ness of it. Now, the reality is that there's very little carryover by the time you get to the DB11. But he said there's this big thing on the screen that's like a rain-sensing wiper. If you know. Now, I have a Jaguar that doesn't have rain-sensing wiper, but a friend of mine does, and it doesn't look like that at all. I didn't disavow him of the fact that it's probably a bespoke Aston Martin special box that takes a good chunk of the windscreen to sense how fast to get the wipers going. And then he said, I don't really like the cluster. It's a big deal when you're driving along, because a lot of clusters now, instrument clusters now, are fully digital, so you can have whatever you want. But this was sort of set with a big rev counter in the middle. So I prefer the classic 2-gauge rev counter and speedo, which I do as well, but I didn't say I agreed with them. And then he said, and it sort of rides a bit harsher than I thought, and I would have thought with a car costing $300,000, you'd get some flippin' floor mats. He said, did you know floor mats are an optional extra? So the ride that I was having in this DB11 was blunted a little bit by the fact that the person who owned it, who had waited a long time for this, who flew to England to see it being made and brought it back, would probably be summarised in saying he wasn't overly content. So I'm not sure how long the nice blue DB11, which you may occasionally see parked out in front of the church, will actually remain, because I visit with him reasonably often. But he did have an old DB9. A DB9 is the previous model. It was the same colour. It had its foibles, but he absolutely loved it. And that led him to buying the DB11. Because the principle that he had learned had been reinforced over many years. He was a car dealer, now he's a property. Is if the 9 is great, that the 11 will be amazing. If the $100 chair was just about there, the $300 chair will be amazing. So we learn just the opposite. And what I want to finish with today is, how do we unlearn and how do we learn to be content? And I'm afraid it's not quite coming up on what I had on my phone, but he says, I know how to, everywhere in all things, I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. Now, what's not said here and easy to read here is that some versions, and if we had it in New Living Translation, Andy, just if we do, it'd be great to bring it up. He says, I have learned the secret. And there's a verse here about a mysterious, not a dark art so much, but it's a mystery. It's something that's not stumbled on. So it's not just learning as in rote learning, or I'm going to go through step by step. This is a mystery that needs to be uncovered and worked at and sought. So it's not much wonder that we don't see much content around us. It's something that is learnt by internal and external factors. In other words, we choose to do that ourselves to learn if we want to learn this, but it's also sometimes things that happen to us from outside that may beat us incredibly into contentment. For example, I observed many people in Africa during my time over there last year who were wildly content, including some time ago when we went, in fact it was in Fiji, I think we went over a few years ago, where one of the Fijians had a burger for the first time, and he had never in his life had mayonnaise. So we thought that was a reasonably common thing, that most people would have had a burger. And on the way back from the airport to the village, we stopped off at a burger place, to which we had a very average burger, but for him it was amazing. Now, did he want another one after that? I remember 2 weeks later saying, when will you have your next burger? Will that be something that you want? He said it was sort of like this amazing wet cream. I still remember he couldn't make out what mayonnaise was that was in the burger. And he said, no thanks, because the equivalent cost of that burger would have fed his family for the week. Gives you an example of the contrast and comparison. So in learning this mysterious thing, and I want to finish with this, how will we do this? If somebody knows something that they have learned through a long period of trial and error, external and internal circumstances have led them to it, we often only find that out by walking alongside them and getting to know them. A few weeks ago, I think I mentioned or touched on the word humility as part of what I'm speaking on. And often the way we learn what it is to have humility is to walk alongside those that exhibit that and learn their responses in various situations. So Paul is saying, I have learnt this, I've had this beaten into me. And we read from the start of his very public confession, or rather his very public conversion, becoming a Christian on the road to Damascus, and what his role and station was before. And as we read the story of the Apostle Paul through the Gospels, goes from being an apostle called by Christ to the very least of all the brethren. So there's a humbling and a humility process going on there. But he needed to walk with others, and others needed to walk with him to learn what it was to be humble. And I believe exactly the same thing applies when we learn what it is to be content. So to do that, we need to find someone who is content. Now, this might be a problem, because as I was thinking this week, I thought, who do I know that's really, truly, fully content? Is there someone, my mentor perhaps, or could my supervisor suggest someone, or various people that I was in contact with? Do I have any fellow colleagues, any other pastors who are content? Do I know someone who might be that person of peace that I would look to and say, this person seems to have, if it not all together, reasonably together? How do I learn this? Who do I learn it from? And so I began a process of actually ticking off in my mind someone who might be content that I could learn. And I found that rather than looking older, with the greatest of respect to those I know and respect who are older, I found myself often looking younger. And yet we come as faith as a child. And I began to think that maybe there's something that is not learned as we go through, in the way the world was going from contentment to uncontentment, if I could just hold on to the contentment represented as a child. Walk with them, understand what's going on for them, and then not move on from that position. And that involves a series of fairly tough choices. Maybe the Mexican fisherman had sat and watched others and thought, I could do and go where they've gone, or I can make a decision to be content with what I have. My encouragement would be, whatever age we are here today, whatever stage we happen to be in, to consider what it is to hold on to whatever level we have and be content with that. Because what I want to close with today is just to consider, I just want us to close our eyes as I lead us in a prayer. But before we pray, let's close our eyes, and I want us all to think about one area of our life. There may be more than one, but I want us to think about one area of our life that we are completely, completely content about. I'm going to suggest that we learn something internally from this. Paul learned whether he had to put himself down or whether he was lifted up to be content. And I believe we can learn something from that one area of life. Now, it may be a relationship. It may be an item. It may be a thing. It may be a position. With every eye closed, if we could. So you can't see the person beside you. If it was really hard to think of one area of life, or you've still not thought of it, and I've deliberately not given you long, because I guess if we really had to think, we might be content with, I don't know, school cert marks 50 years ago or 30 years ago, whatever it was. So I'm talking about the now. I'm the only one going to have my eyes open, but I'm just very interested if I could please ask you that. If it was very hard to come up with one thing, or you still haven't, just raise your hand. What if it was moderately hard to come up with one thing? Just raise your hand. And what if it was quite easy? It just was like that. Yes, I'm absolutely content with that. Wonderful. Thanks, guys. There's a few don't knows, but thank you for your responses. I'm going to leave and close with a short clip. Thanks, Joe. Open your eyes if you like. If this is a really important thing, and I believe it is, a verse in Matthew 16:24 that talks about being able to put ourselves down in order that we might be content. And this is a pretty key part to the Christian life. If we could bring that up, thanks. Matthew 16:24. Thanks, Andy. And we see here it says that if anyone wants to follow me, he must deny himself. Deny himself, take up his cross and follow me. This word deny here is the same as the word that's used for this word abased. So it's a pretty key principle to understand. And when I was looking and researching for this, there was a particular YouTube clip, because I thought, how is it that we learn how to abase and to abound? I won't play it today, but I want to encourage you to look at it. And this YouTube clip says how to learn how to be abased and abound, the very thing Paul was speaking about. Given this is a pretty key thing and we would suffer generally from a lack of happiness and contentment, guess how many views this clip had? Someone had felt it was a 42-minute message that someone had recorded and had been up posted for 2 months. Have a guess how many views for people that understood where Paul had said this is a very important thing to learn how to be abased. In other words, how to be content whether we're up or down. Have a guess how many views this particular clip had. Anyone want to hazard a guess? Fairly important concept? No, haven't seen it too many times. This one had exactly no views, zero views. So someone had felt prompted to, on their heart, in a very humble way, it didn't even have any particular graphics on it. Maybe that's why it had no views. But someone had felt in their heart that was very important. So could I commend that to you? It's a clip that says, you'll easily find it, it's the one that has no views. But as you listen there, the person has understood this is a very important principle. The next verse, which we'll come to in a few weeks' time, I can do all things through Christ who strengthened me. If you have a look at YouTube clips on that, there are hundreds with many views. The point I want to close with, we love the triumphant. We love the big successes and we want to emulate those. But when Paul has said here, this is a key to the Christian life, learning how to be content, because ultimately, if we want to follow Christ, we have to learn what it is to be abased, to deny ourselves, and come and follow him. It's a really important principle. So in summary, whether in want or contentment, learning how to be abased and abound, learning how to be happy, whether it's up or down, whether we have nothing or much, is a learned process from other people that have learned it. Walk with them, walk alongside, and see what it is we can learn from them in learning what it is to be content. I'm going to close with a prayer and then we'll have our closing song today. Thank you. Father God, we pray that as we learn what it is to be content, that we would be good students of this. It wouldn't just be something that is learnt, as it were, by accident. Because it's really important that we know what it is, whatever our situation, to be content. Because you may well call us to do something, a ministry, a situation, a position where we would say and look and say, Don't know if I want to do that. That's sort of a bit beneath me. Lord, what about my giftings? What about my abilities? And he says, very good. Would you help with the offering? Would you help with hospitality? Would you welcome people? Could you possibly help with morning tea? Could you help with the recycling? These are just little examples that we have here. But whatever it is, Lord, I ask that you would make us aware that if the person who wrote most of the New Testament and was called from an exalted position to a humble position in order that the progress of the gospel would carry on and continue and be ordered in some way that we see it today, the influence of this one man who learned how to be content is inestimable. We cannot estimate the size of that. And Lord, wouldn't it be great to be satisfied with last year's model, yesterday's things, things that are cheap and easy to come by? Help us, Lord, to unlearn that which we have learned and to learn that which we have not yet learned. Help us to learn what it is to be content in everything. We thank you for this wonderful day, this city with all of its shakes and rattles and rolls, that we can fundamentally be content because you have placed us here. You've placed us in this church. Help us to be content in every way. Doesn't mean we stay where we are necessarily or not at all, but help us to be content in the position that we are in, whether that's relationships, things, jobs, any aspect of our life at all, that we may go from here and begin to learn what it is to be contented people. Thank you, Lord. We ask for your help in this and the encouragement and support of others in this.